Welcome to the Bringing Rural Back podcast, where we help you live a more prepared and sustainable life today so that you can have a better tomorrow no matter what. This is your host, Greg Carter, and this is episode number 12. Today we will be talking about, just like I promised in last episode, prepping when your spouse is opposed. But before we get into the main topic of the show, I would first like to thank everybody who has listened, who sent emails, who's messaged me, who's left comments on the Facebook page. We're growing, and it's awesome, and I appreciate each and every one of you. But I do want to talk about the Facebook page for a moment. I actually use the Facebook page as kind of a research center. Something will wing its way through my head, and I'll go, I wonder what everybody else thinks about that. Now, I know it's not everybody. I know it's generally like-minded people, but I get a vast range of responses. So I'll post a question on the Facebook page, and I'll, you know, people will start responding, and I really appreciate that. That helps me understand the way a much larger group of people look at a situation or something like that. So I would like to encourage you, if you haven't, go to The Rural Economist on Facebook. Look it up. It's really easy to find. Again, that's The Rural Economist on Facebook. Just click a like. If you want to make sure that you get everything that we post, then make sure that you mark it as a receive notifications. That's completely up to you, though. I would like to have you be a more active member of this community. Also, I love questions. I respond to everybody who sends me a question or a comment. You can either do the comment on the blog, which will be linked to the podcast. It doesn't matter if you find it through the blog or if you find it through Stitcher or if you find it through iTunes. You know, there's a way to just click over and go to the blog and leave a comment. Or you can send me an email. Email is actually best if you have a question. It is theruraleconomist@gmail.com. Okay? Now let's talk about preparing or prepping when your spouse is opposed. A basic level of preparedness, I think, is crucially important. It should be important to everybody, but it's not. Just imagine if everybody had a basic level of preparedness. Say 10 days worth of food and water and backup heat and you know, ways to deal with anything. If you have 10 days worth of food and water, you can normally deal with 95%+ of all the things that happen. And we could effectively, if everybody did that, almost put FEMA out of business. I mean, we really could. And that's a very good thing. If we want to limit government's impact in our lives, then by taking that personal responsibility for the short-term well-being of your family, even in a crisis, we're empowering ourselves and we're taking away power from everybody else that wants to be able to control us. Now, it's crucially important to me, but to some people, it's just absolutely weird. And, you know, we kind of got to deal with that, because we're not going to be able to reach everybody. But there comes a time for a lot of people where they come to a realization that being prepared just makes sense. It doesn't matter if it's a tornado, a flood, a hurricane, a wildfire, a blizzard. It doesn't matter, a sickness, an injury. It doesn't matter what it is. Most of the time when somebody comes to the realization, hey, I need to be more prepared, there's an event that triggered it. It may have been to you or to us. It may have been to a neighbor or it may have been across the country, and then we realized, hey, that could have happened here. Well, the first thing we want to do when we come to that realization is we want to share our enthusiasm, our desire to be more prepared with our spouse. Sometimes our spouse is unenthusiastic. Sometimes they're actively opposed. Now, when you run into that situation, there is a chance, a growing chance, especially the more determined we become to be prepared for potential conflict. So, and you don't want unnecessary conflict in your home. Your home should be the one place in the entire world where you are the most comfortable and the most at peace. It doesn't matter how bad a day I've had at work. It doesn't matter what's happened. It doesn't. None of that matters. When I go home, I want to be able to breathe, to relax, and to have some basic enjoyment. So we're going to talk about some ways to help you talk to your spouse about being more prepared and building your self-reliance without causing too much conflict in your home. Now, the reasons your spouse could be opposed to being prepared are many, and we're just going to cover a few of them. The first one is the show Doomsday Preppers. Now, I'm going to be honest, I have not watched a complete episode because I can't. It just bugs the fire out of me, okay? Plus, I just, to sit down and watch television with all the commercials and all of that stuff, I've got so many other things I'd rather be doing. You know, my wife doesn't like it. She's watched more episodes than I have, but she doesn't like it. She likes some other things, and, you know, I've told you before, if she's got something on and I'm not working on something, or even if I am working on something, I'll sit there beside her while she's watching something, and I'll just kind of check it out. But Doomsday Prepper has harmed the idea of preparedness, and it's helped a little too. Now, first I'm going to say, cover how it's helped. Well, for the people who are inclined to preparedness anyway, it's made people question the likelihood of something traumatic occurring. And it does demonstrate some things that can be done to help you prepare for a major event. But that's about it for the benefits. Now, how has it harmed preparedness? Oh, wow. Lots of ways. First off, the producers of the show make everybody who go on the show look like a lunatic. They have to be preparing for a specific event. And it shows, it either paints the people who are on there as the most paranoid sort of people, or they pick the most paranoid sort of people. Now, I'm not telling you not to prepare for an EMP. I'm not telling you to not prepare for financial collapse. It doesn't matter to me. But when you're trying to talk to a spouse, or you're trying to talk, well, today we're talking about a spouse, but if you're trying to talk to anybody, the last thing that you want to do when you're trying to encourage somebody to be more prepared is throw out the Yellowstone supervolcano. Is it a real threat? Sure. Is it as likely a threat as a tornado break in the southeastern United States? Oh, heck no. Is it as likely as the possibility for a hurricane on the Atlantic coast? Of course not. Is it as likely as an earthquake in California? No. By using the events that are most likely to occur, you're going to gain some credibility with anybody you're talking to, especially your spouse. Now, so Doomsday Preppers has really thrown up a roadblock in a lot of relationships. The second, and even when I wrote it down, I went, you know what, that sounds really weird. But there are some people that think preparing for something makes it more likely to happen. Okay, now you may be going, no, they don't. Think about it. There are people out there that actively avoid thinking about something because they believe if they ignore it, it will go away. It's true. It happens a lot. I've been guilty of it in the past myself. Taking any preventative action forces people to think about the possibility of bad things happening to them and not someone the next town over or the next county or the next state or some foreign country. Denial is comfortable until something happens. All right? Another reason that your spouse might be opposed to the idea of preparedness is they don't want people to think they're weird. When I first told my wife that I wanted to start increasing our food storage and I wanted to be better prepared, her first response, and that's another reason that it bugs me, was, you're not going to become one of those doomsday people, are you? And I had to go, baby, you know, just look. We went through a tornado. You know, I told you in the episode on why I personally prepare, we lost almost everything. And yet, my wife still's like, well, I mean, that just happens. We pick up and we go on, and she didn't put any further thought into it. So I had to ease her fears. And it took me some time. Now, I am glad to say now that, you know, she'll look around and go, hey, we need to pick up some more of that. And I'm so thankful that she's not opposed anymore. She's not as on board as I am, but that's okay. You know, it's my responsibility to be the leader of my household. And I know that there are some folks out there that's going to be mad at that, and I'm sorry. Not really. I'm not really sorry. But in our household, I'm not a dictator, but I'm supposed to be the one that kind of chooses the direction. I'm the captain of the ship, and we work together and everything. But if I don't take responsibility for the well-being of my family, nobody cares more about my family's well-being than me and my wife, okay? Your next-door neighbor doesn't care as much about your survival as you do. So I could have handled the situation better, I think. Well, I know I could have. And that's one reason that I wanted to do this, because I've learned some things as I've gone along. Another reason that your spouse might be opposed is we don't have the money. Again, we have Doomsday Preppers to thank for this one. Doomsday Preppers, everybody that it shows, has way more money than I do. Way more.
I've got a 40,000-acre ranch in the middle of nowhere, and I've got 17 years of food and water that I bought at Costco.
And, you know, for the majority of the people all over the world, that's not an option. Very few people, can afford their home, feeding their family, all of the bills that are involved, putting a little bit away for retirement, having an emergency savings account or whatever, plus buying 40 acres 3 hours away, having another house or having another structure there, plus stocking it with food. It's just unrealistic for the majority of people. So, I had to tell her, you know, I had to tell my wife, well, we don't do it all at once, and we don't have to have all the garbage that a lot of these people have. Now, I call my system the SIIS system. Small, intentional, incremental steps. As best as I can tell, and I've searched the internet, I'm the only one who's ever called anything like this. So we'll be doing another podcast and blog post about the SIIS system in great detail. But for right now, let's just say that every time that you do something little that builds on something else that you've done, you're getting closer to your desired goal. Another one, and the final reason that a lot of spouses are opposed to prepping, is we don't have the space. When a lot of people think about prepping, they envision an entire room filled with freeze-dried foods, or a closet full of nothing but water bottles. And the truth is that prepping will take up some room. But if you do it wisely, it doesn't have to make your home look like an episode of the TV show Hoarders. Once again, I've had people send me clips of it, and okay? Doesn't have to. All right. So how would you go about talking to your spouse about being more prepared? Well, the first thing you want to do is organize your thoughts. And this is a good suggestion no matter what you're going to talk about. It doesn't matter if you're going to talk about buying a new truck, putting in a garden, adding an herb garden, planting a flower in the corner of the lot, buying a new lawnmower. It doesn't matter what you're going to talk about. This is a good idea. Okay? When you organize your thoughts ahead of time, it shows your spouse that whatever you're going to talk about is important to you. You've actually taken the time to think about the situation, and you're not just having a knee-jerk reaction. You're not just reacting to something. It's not just a fleeting wish or a desire or, hey, butterfly. You know, it's not ADD. It's something that you've actually put some thought into. And even if you try, and I've done it, to imagine exactly what a conversation is going to turn out like, you're not going to get it done. It's not going to happen exactly the way you think it will. Promise. Very few conversations go the way we think it will. You'll not be able to predict every possible action and reaction your spouse will have. You have to adjust what you say based on the way they respond. If they are reacting emotionally, you may have to go, you know what, baby? Let's just let it go for right now, and we'll talk about it again later. When you're having the conversation, especially even if it's going well, you need to realize the terms I think, I believe, and I feel are not interchangeable. The term I think is thought-based. The term I feel is emotion-based. The term I believe can be a mixture of both. Now, I honest to goodness wish that that one little section right there was taught in every public speaking class in the entire world. If it were, our communication level would be better. Because we tend to use those interchangeable, and their meanings can be completely different, and their impact on a person is completely different. Marketing companies use the differences in these terms all the time based on how they want the consumer to respond. if it's something targeted at young moms, or if it's something targeted at ego or feel good or whatever, they're going to want to create an emotional response. Now, you're not going to see a stock company, an investment firm, focus solely on emotion. They're going to go into the I believe. They're going to mix facts. They're going to mix emotions.
Oh, if you will invest with us, then you'll be able to retire with X number of dollars and you'll have the life that you deserve.
Okay? It's thought and it's emotion together. And to be honest, there are very few marketing campaigns that are solely based on thought. When you do see those types, they're in industry-specific magazines. There was a commercial that I saw on, I think it was on YouTube or somewhere, for Dropbox. Now, that one was purely thought-driven. There was no emotional context to it. It's use the software and you'll be more efficient. This is how you can do it. So we really need to think about which terms we're using and when. By doing so, you're not being manipulative. You're trying to make sure that you express yourself as effectively as possible. Next is get involved. Now, this one, I honestly believe, is probably going to be primarily targeted at the guys. I'm sure there are some that it goes the other way with, but in my experience, this is primarily a guy-dominated area. I know men that, you know, they go to work, they come home, they pile up in the recliner, wait on their wife to fix supper. They eat supper, they watch television. They get up, they take a shower, they go to bed. Next morning, they can repeat. The wife is completely in charge of the preparation of food, the doing of the laundry, the grocery shopping, the paying of the bills, everything that is involved in the house, even though they may work as many, in some cases, more hours than the husband. And, you know, I know what some folks are going to say. Yeah, but I'm the primary breadwinner. Okay, great. But your wife's contributing too. If you're not actively involved with the operations of your house, and this goes no matter who you are, how can you expect to be able to dictate a change? I mean, that's a fair question. Now, you know, in our situation, I work a full-time job. I blog, I podcast, I do the garden, I cook, I clean whenever my wife's at work. My wife works. She works hard. She actually works more hours per day than I do. She works a 12-hour shift and I work an 8. So when she's working, I cook supper. Now, a lot of times she'll go to the grocery store when I can't, but whenever we can, we go together. We make those decisions together. We talk about things. Okay? So by being actively involved, you have more clout. I want you to try to imagine what your reaction would be if you did everything in the house. You cooked, you cleaned, you did laundry, you did the dishes, you mowed the yard, you did everything. And then your spouse came in and says, you know what, I make more money than you, so I'm going to dictate what we're going to do. Now, even though you're probably, and I hope not, that you're not going to go about it that way, imagine your response. You'd be defensive. You'd be furious.
So don't make that mistake. Before you have this conversation, get involved. And if you've not been involved for a long time, expect some suspicion. If your spouse is so used to you not being involved, it's going to be a major change for them to all of a sudden realize that you're taking an active role. That's sad, but it's true. Okay? So, you've organized your thoughts. You've gotten involved. Next is the conversation. The conversation should not be a dictation. Not at all. It should be based on things that you can point at. I've already talked about, don't point at the global level problems. You're not going to win any points that way. It's best to ease folks in to a desired response. It's absolutely the best idea. So you go, honey, you know, okay, right now, if I were to be having this conversation with my wife right now, honey, you know, man, those folks in Mexico, they dealt with Hurricane Patricia, and it tore everything up. I mean, look around. I mean, Patricia did that. There was flooding in Texas. There was flooding in South Carolina. There was wildfires up in the Pacific Northwest. What would we do if something like that happened here? And then listen to their response. That's another biggie. Listen to what they have to say. Show that you care about what their opinion is. A lot of times, if you say, you know, what do you think about keeping a couple extra days worth of food in the house? They'll go, oh, okay, well, not a problem, you know. And then you can move on from there. But sometimes you've got to go, you know, we don't know. Hurricane Katrina, which I know it's been several years ago, it's actually something really good to point at. Because not only did they have something traumatic occur, but help was a long time in coming. So by using that, you can talk to them. Don't talk about the global events. Talk about something that's relatable. Encourage them to come to the answers. Ask them what they think. Ask them what they feel, especially if it's an emotional person. Some people are emotional-based, and some people are logic-based, and then some people are a mix. That's why I pointed out the difference in terms. And you need to know what your spouse is. Okay? But the conversation should be supportive. It should not be condescending. It should be an exchange. It should not be a monologue. What do you think about this? How can we do this? What do you think we should do? You know, encourage them to be involved. Now, even if your spouse goes, no, I am opposed to having 3 days worth of extra food in the house. Which, first of all, if you have somebody that's opposed to 3 days worth of food, extra food in the house, there's more problems than just preparedness. 3 days is not too much to ask. But you may, especially if you come at it being more prepared, you know, the medical supplies and a backup generator or an inverter or whatever, you may have to agree to disagree. And I hope that you've developed your relationship far enough with your spouse that you can say, you know what, I respect your opinion, even though we disagree, and I want you to respect me to do what I think is needed. If you've got that much, then you've got it whipped. So regardless of whether or not your spouse is is on board with it, if you have an acceptance level where they go, okay, you can do something, then you can get started. Now, I'm not telling you to go out. In fact, I'm discouraging you from going out as soon as you first get started and buying $300 worth of freeze-dried food. What I am encouraging you to do is when you buy SpaghettiOs for the kids, if you normally buy 2 cans a week, buy 3. If you buy a bag of pasta a week, buy 2. And just do a little each week. Small, intentional, incremental steps. So you're slowly building it up. As long as, you know, I just thought about something. When I first started preparing, my family, we eat canned corn about once a week. Sometimes twice, depends on what we're eating, but generally once a week. So we went to the grocery store, and we went together, and it was on sale. Super duper oh my God sale, you know, one of those, come buy this. So instead of buying 1 can, I bought 3. What are you doing that for, honey? Well, it's on super duper oh my God sale, and I'm able to get 3 cans for what we had ordinarily got 1 can for, and baby, it's not going to go bad in our house. Oh, okay. Well, the next time, there's beans on sale. Did the same thing. Okay. Well, every time that we went, if corn was on the menu for the next week, I'd buy 1 or 2 more cans, and then I'd put it in the back of the one and use the oldest. After about a month, my wife goes, honey, don't you think we got enough corn? Oh, okay, no problem. Didn't buy corn anymore. Not for a while. Not any additional corn. Now, if we bought corn and went to the back, used the oldest, kept rotation, kept the same level of stock. Then it got to where, you know, don't you think we have enough beans? Especially pintos. Don't you think we have enough pintos? Oh, okay. Same. And then you're able to move from, you know, corn, pinto beans, crushed tomatoes, whatever it is that you buy. You know, as bad as it sounds, every now and then I like Spam. So I'd buy a can of Spam. Now, I don't buy a can of Spam every single week. The salt will just dry you up like a prune. But, you know, probably, I don't know, once a month. So when I buy one once a month, instead of buying one, I buy 2. And then if I buy some next month, I'll buy 2 more. Gradual, a small, intentional, incremental steps. Now this allows you to start building stuff up. You're slowly increasing your larder. You're doing it so slowly that you're not seeing a financial impact. You're just not. Okay? Well, at some point, actually, I'm going to tell you about ours. I'm going to tell you about our demonstration. 2 years ago, my wife asked me what I wanted for my birthday. I said, you know what I want for my birthday? I want a propane camp stove. That's what I want. Is this one of them prepper things? Oh, no, not necessarily. I like to camp. I think we ought to go camping some. Okay. So she got me And it was, I couldn't ask for a better situation. She got me a camp stove. It wasn't 10 days later. Actually, it was 9 days, now that I think about it. We had a big snowstorm. For us. Knocked the power out. Sometime in the middle of the night. My wife woke up. I want to say it was about 4:30, 4:45. She goes, honey, the power's out. Okay. So I got up, started a fire in the fireplace, and she's like, I wonder how long the power's been out. I said, I don't know. It had already gotten cool in the house. It wasn't cold, but it had gotten cool. So I started a fire in the fireplace, and she goes, well, how are we going to eat breakfast? I said, I'm not worried about it at all. So I went and got my cook stove, my camp stove. I said, I got this covered. I lit it up. I got my cast iron. And I said, what does my baby want for breakfast? So we had grilled cheese. We had sausage. We had eggs. Milk was still cold. Was able to make coffee. Was able to do all this stuff. We had a nice breakfast. We were able to sit and play board games. We were able to entertain ourselves while the power was out. And she looked at me. She said, did you know this was going to happen? I said, baby, how could I have known? She said, but what you did, what you asked for, did all this for us. I'm like, yeah, sure did. And that was a major turning point. That was when she changed from tolerating preparedness to being more involved with preparedness. The demonstration is a critically important component. And odds are extremely high. No matter where you are in the world, something will happen in the next year, two, three, that will enable you to demonstrate, you know what? Being at least basic, having at least basic preparedness is a good idea. After that, you move into the hope. The hope is that that demonstration will do exactly what it did with my wife. It'll change it from tolerance to participation. It's so much easier to do anything when your spouse is on board. Because, you know, we can be going along and go, I want to get X this week. I want to get 25 pounds of sugar. You know, we're coming up on canning season, which it's not right now, but I'm talking about like next season. We're coming up on canning season. I want to put up a whole bunch of strawberry and blackberry jam, and I want to do all this stuff, so I'm going to need 25 pounds of sugar. Well, don't you think we can buy it in a five-pound bag? Yeah, we can buy it in a five-pound bags, but I'm going to be putting up a lot, and whatever's left, it's not going to go bad. That is our statement at our house. It's not going to go bad because we store what we eat, and we eat what we store. Now, there's a guy that does another podcast, been around a lot longer than I have, that's his phrase, store what you eat and eat what you store. And that's good wisdom. Okay, so I'll go, honey, we need to get 25 pounds of sugar this week. Or I want to get 10 pounds of pintos or black beans or whatever it is. And then we can have a conversation. Well, you know, this week we had this or this happen. I would really rather not spend that much money on it this week, but we can do a 10-pound bag this week, and then we'll do 10 more pounds next week or whatever. So by doing that and by getting your spouse on board, you magnify what you can accomplish and you shorten your time frame. Now, I will be honest, there are some spouses that will never be on board with preparedness. It happens, and I know it. And if you've at least got them to the point where, you know, they're not going to be actively opposed to it, even if they don't support it, and they respect you enough to allow you to do it, you can still do it a little at a time. Because if you're the one who's thinking about being prepared, then you're the one who's responsible for your family's well-being in a crisis. Because you're the one that's thinking about it, and you're the one that's mature enough to realize that preparedness is really your responsibility. I hope this helped you. I really do. I hope you enjoyed it. I'd love to hear how everything's going. I'd love to hear, have your comments, your questions. If you enjoy this podcast, share it with somebody. That'll help me a ton. Share it on social media. Share it with your neighbor down the street. Say, hey, let me let you listen to this guy. Email somebody a link. Give us a review on iTunes and Stitcher. That'll help us too. Okay? I appreciate you. This is Greg, and step by step, we're bringing Rural back. Have a great day. Bye.